Hello everyone and welcome to GFG tonight, and we are live also on Twitter Space. How are you doing, people? We learned today that Nick Fuentes has been rebanned. What an unfortunate event. He's been rebanned, some would argue, because he went with provocation, but at the same time, the things that he seems to have spoken of, they are concerns around the racial makeup of various industries, including the media. And I think there's something really unjust with how Twitter applies this rule, because you constantly see people talk about affirmative action on Twitter. That doesn't seem to be a problem. Affirmative action is nothing else than a form of disempowerment of whites for the advantage of others. And it seems that it's not a problem to say, hey, this industry is too populated by males. Hey, this industry is too dominated by whites. But Nick Fuentes has his own approach and his own side to this, and describes a problem that we've been talking about for years and yet gets banned because of it. You know, Elon should think about, if you make a rule on Twitter, it should be that it applies to all races and all sexes and all genders and all whatever you want to protect. I would be fine with this. That would be acceptable. But when your rules are designed to create a non-just double standard, that is a problem. Personally, I take issue with this. And I hope that we can make Twitter eventually the only platform that applies its rules fairly between people of all races, people of all sexes. But we're not yet there. Hitch Slap is joining us. He will be handling the Twitter Space side. Hitch, how are you doing?
Hello, JF. I'm doing very well. I've just walked in, had a little walk. It's a public holiday here. So we've got a nice sunny day, and I'm heading to a barbecue later. So yeah, sorry I'm a couple of minutes late. I just want to let you know you're roboting on Twitter, so I'm not sure about the changing the port or something.
Ah, I'm roboting again. How is that possible? Mm.
Yes, see. It's still roboting at the moment. Yep.
Let's see if I can do something about it. Last time it took quite some effort. So I don't know if I'll be able to fix it live.
No worries. Well, I've got time. So, yeah, let me know if you change anything. And anything I can do to help, let me know.
Shit. Well, that is very annoying. Microphone.
How did you fix it last time? You just changed the frequency or something?
Well, last time, I mean, I fixed it while I was not live. Fixing this live is almost undoable. I need to do multiple computer restarts. Do you hear now, and am I still roboting?
Yeah, you're still robotic, absolutely.
Okay, I'm going to restart BlueStack, and we'll see if that fixes it.
Perfect.
Well, that's something I didn't expect, because we had solved this problem, but it's coming back. That is really too bad. I need to find what causes this. It seems that my fixes that I've done are still there, so why would it do this? I don't know. Let's see if we can reconnect.
He brings up speakers, so if anything happens during the show that you want to add, you want to speak on. JF, go ahead.
So am I roboting now?
Oh, absolutely perfect. We can hear you loud and clear.
So I've took the side solution to just redirect my direct mic. As a consequence, people will not be able on Twitter Space to hear the studio audio, but it doesn't matter because I don't think I'm playing any videos tonight. So let's get started. Perfect. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? How are you doing, people of the Twitter space? Let's talk about ChatGPT again. There's this article, very interesting, at The Cognitive Dissident, Do you know of Adron Sorm? Perhaps you aren't interested in fantasy, so it's understandable if you didn't read his Fire of the Heart series. Of course, this Adron Sorm is a fictitious individual. So Cognitive Dissident played with ChatGPT and had him invent personalities to test its creativity. So it's very much in line with what I had done on the show. It's always fun to work on the creativity side because these AIs are very good when it comes to reporting facts that already exist, but it's harder for them when you get into, all right, invent something like this, invent something like that. So I really like these tests. If you want to go read the article, it's at The Cognitive Dissident. Elon Musk, since we're talking about free speech on Twitter, Elon Musk was answering to Scott Adams. Scott Adams was saying, I'm just finding out today, thanks to dozens of people informing me, that the COVID shots do not stop transmission. Did the rest of you already know that? I am so dumb. And Elon Musk was answering to this, yes, but this was not disclosed to the public for a long time after the government and vaccine makers knew. Not cool. That said, obviously, if someone is coughing less, there is some reduction of transmission. I don't know that that's true, Elon. You have to, I know that it's instinctively, it sounds right. If you cough less, you project less viruses in the air, presumably. But sometimes it works totally the other way. Sometimes the fact that you don't cough makes you feel confident. You go out more, you interact closer to people. And sometimes not coughing leads to more transmission. So I certainly wouldn't assume this, Elon. Some random bloke has sent a super chat. He says, hey, JF, welcome to the Armageddon. He sends me a Daily Mail article. Let's have a quick look at this. The Armageddon. Biden's migration headache explodes. A record 242 million people across Latin America now want to leave, many eyeing the U.S. as border crisis intensifies. Well, that is not surprising. That is one of the great things that was with Trump. Trump was displaying harshness. And that tells everyone in the world, you know, it's not an open door here in America, so be careful, don't plan a travel. Just the attitude of Trump, and that's probably something he got from his marketing instincts. If you market that you're not available, if you say, I'm not available, don't come here. Just that will shut down the problem of a lot of people wanting to head to America because they have the impression that it's going to be easy. But under Biden, you're going to get exactly this. I see that Rocco ETH is a speaker in the Twitter space. Rocco, are you there?
Hey, Jean-François. Thanks very much. I am, yeah.
Hey, it's great to speak with you because I often retweeted your stuff and saw your tweets. It's great to see you on this Twitter space and hear your voice.
Appreciate it, buddy. Thank you.
So identifying yourself as ETH, does that mean you, do you think that ETH is the way to go for the future of crypto? Do you think it will overtake Bitcoin in the next bull run?
Yeah, I mean, I think it has a lot of potential. I think people are kind of a little bit too bearish on crypto right now. I think it's a good time to learn more. I think it's a good time to buy a little bit, although, you know, you might have to do that gradually over time. But yeah, I'm bullish on crypto. I'm bullish on Ethereum. You know, I'm actually quite excited about what crypto can do for improving our epistemology, improving science, improving the spread of truth over things that are popular or politically correct.
I totally agree. The decentralization, the absence of censorship in the culture, and sometimes, in fact, the impossibility of censorship are some of the great things we can expect. I mean, it will be like the internet of the early days, but there won't be a possibility. This is really great.
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot to be excited about. It kind of doesn't work right now because a lot of this stuff has scalability problems, and you know, this it's taken a while to solve that, but I think the solutions are coming. There are some exciting things with happening with rollups. You know, Ethereum itself is expanding into a whole ecosystem of rollups. You don't really use Ethereum anymore. You use Optimism, Arbitrum, Metis, all of these layer twos that prove the validity of transactions on mainnet Ethereum, but you don't actually have to transact on mainnet, so you can do things much more cheaply. And I think that's going to mean that, you know, we can get much more use without people spending huge amounts of money on gas fees. So
yeah, that was the thing that was almost insulting of Ethereum. You had all sorts of things enabled on there, like Mines Token, and I found, okay, I have a lot of Mines Token, but I have to pay like $600 to get them out. That didn't make sense. And ETH has been working on this. I've had recent experience with the Polygon second layer. I didn't know that it existed. Basically sending stuff for 1 cent or less, and it's viable.
Yeah, I mean, Polygon is an interesting one. It's not actually... It's sort of like, I don't know what the word for this is in biology, a mimic. It's not actually an L2. It markets itself as an L2, but it isn't.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So
what's the technical difference here?
Well, right. So that's a good question. what is a blockchain? Why do you go to a blockchain? Well, you go there for consensus, right? So if I pay you some money or I execute some code on a blockchain, you want to be sure that that can't be reverted, right? Ethereum is very expensive to transact on because it has the most economically secure consensus. In order for somebody to revert Ethereum transactions, they would have to spend $30 billion to buy 1/3 of the ETH stake, or 2/3 of the ETH stake and undo your transaction. Whereas Polygon is a lot cheaper, right? But its market cap is much smaller, and it's less decentralized because it uses, I believe it uses delegated proof of stake. So yes, it's much cheaper, but you're getting less economic security, and it's also less decentralized, right? So anyone can be a part of the Ethereum consensus. Well, not anyone. You need 16 ETH, right? Which is 16 ETH is what, about $25,000 right now. Mm-hmm. You can run your own validator for that. Whereas with Polygon, you know, you can't run your own Polygon validator. You can stake with a staking node, but it's ultimately up to them whether they decide to censor. Whereas if you run Ethereum node at home, you know, you can include a transaction. So it's very difficult to censor Ethereum, very difficult to revert it. The number of entities that are able to participate in Ethereum's consensus is around 200,000. So there's room for about 200,000 different validators. Polygon, I suspect, it's probably only a couple of hundred. Like the Ethereum guys are real nerds, right? They spent a long time perfecting their consensus, and it is the best. I mean, it's 200,000 people, 15-minute economic finality, $30 billion economic security to revert a transaction. So, you know, it's pretty good, but I mean, it's taken a long time to get here, right? I mean, the math of that gets quite complicated of how they actually achieved it. And to be honest, I mean, I don't fully understand the math behind Ethereum's consensus.
I really appreciate that you are giving me that course, because this is the whole universe of proof of stake. And I didn't quite understand, but now I understand better that in a proof of stake system, you really care about the distributedness of your consensus, because it's viable, basically. It's in principle viable. I'm sure that the Polygon people are super honest, and I don't expect them to engage in censorship, but it's good to know that on ETH, you can't even possibly, because you can't gather $30 billion of ETH without significant price movement.
Yeah, exactly. And the great thing about the real roll-ups like Arbitrum and Optimism is they actually inherit the economic security, but they don't inherit the high gas fees. So you know, this is how crypto is going to win with roll-ups, where you inherit the security, but you get to transact cheaply. At least that's the theory.
Absolutely. And we see great strides in the login domain. People having their identity tied to a wallet. And I think eventually it will replace even the conception of usernames, password. You will log into Facebook or to Twitter with your Meta wallet or something like this.
Yeah, there's a lot of possibilities. One thing I was talking to about that might interest you from the point of view of, shall we say, controversial science, was I was talking to some people about setting up a prize to find a pathogen that causes homosexuality. Because I know Greg Cochran has this theory that homosexual, or at least male homosexuality, is probably caused by a pathogen, but probably kind of hard to get funding to study that in the traditional system. But in crypto, one could set up a smart contract to award a prize to whoever manages to find it.
Yeah, so this theory, to clarify, because people can misunderstand the terms you've used, we're talking about maybe a bacteria, a yeast infecting someone, and as a consequence would cause predispositions that would eventually lead someone into homosexuality. I should say there is no evidence at all that this is the case. Personally, I think it's not a research direction that's worth exploring. I don't think it's particularly interesting.
Right. I mean, it might not be true. And if it's not true, then if there was a prize with an expiry time, you know, you could set it up so the thing automatically expires and the people who funded it just get their money back.
Talking about making a smart contract using crypto to kind of make it public that if someone does it, it will go to him.
Yes, right. So it would be an incentive to find it, you see. And if there are certain questions where maybe the establishment doesn't want people to research it, and so they cut the funding, you know, crypto is one way that that could be solved.
That is absolutely fascinating. Now, there's always the problem that crypto kind of gives you a delusion on this, which is that you're going to have to set your smart contract in some way that it's appealing to some kind of oracle, I believe they call it. And, yes. And ultimately, it's going to be a human decision that says, am I satisfied by this research project?
Yes. There is the issue of oracles is somewhat of a problem. But, maybe in the future, we will have, a dedicated protocol for deciding scientific questions. And there's some interesting designs for oracles on this, actually. One of them is the Augur Oracle, where you have like a token, and people holding the token can vote whether something is true or false. Now, you know, they might vote the wrong way because of, say, political correctness or something, but the protocol has a built-in system where if there's, a large-scale disagreement, lots of people are voting one way, lots of people are voting the other way, and they won't change their minds. Then you get an automatic fork, and you would then get two versions of it. So if you had some kind of oracle for scientific truth, and people wanted to use it to lie, then very quickly you get a fork, you get a lying version, and you get a true version. And the economic incentive idea is that the version that lies is probably not really worth very much, right? Because who wants to use an oracle that lies?
And so they get punished?
Yeah, well, they're holding a token that's worthless then, right? Okay. Yeah, if they vote for the one that's false, they're holding an oracle token for an oracle that tells lies. So,
very nice. So they are invested in the success of their oracle.
Well, they're invested in some sense, as long as there's enough of questions, right? As long as people are paying to use it and, somebody is prepared to pay for the truth, the ones who vote for lies will be left holding garbage, right?
Absolutely fascinating. Go Away asks on the chat, can we have AI oracles? I guess it would be in principle possible, but undesirable. I mean, given the AIs and how they're manipulated by humans in the end, I would be highly doubtful.
You could absolutely have it. You can, there is some manipulation going on with large language models at the moment, but you could make your own large language model. That's going to be done relatively soon, open source it, And then, you know, the kind of manipulation they do is done right at the end. It's called reinforcement learning by human feedback. And you just don't do that, right? Or you do reinforcement, but for truthfulness rather than for political correctness. And then you could use that as your oracle source. Now, wow. One of the problems with that is, you know, you can't execute these AIs on chain, right?
Yeah.
Because crypto chains have a cost for computation, and these AI models are extremely compute intensive, even just in inference mode. But there are probably solutions to that that are coming, zero knowledge proofs, that kind of thing, where, you know, maybe you can't run the computation on chain, but you can sort of prove that you ran it and that it produced a certain result. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's probably coming. AI oracles are almost certainly coming. Probably the first real use case would be something like a social network with automated moderation, where you knew exactly which AI was going to do the moderation, and there was no possible human biasing. So you would sign up for this network and you'd say, okay, you know, this AI has been fine-tuned to respond in this particular way. So we know that it's not going to, you know, ban things that are true, or it's not going to deboost things that are true.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, like there's a lot of possibilities.
This is fascinating. I'm fascinated at two things. First, the developments of the current crypto is just mind-blowing. I'm fascinated at the fact that none of this that we're doing right now couldn't have been done 20 years ago. Bitcoin could have shown up in 1997. And ultimately, the technology would run on a computer from 1997.
Yeah, I mean, I guess a lot of it was just conceptual.
Where crypto sends us back to ourselves. And I love the way you describe the trust building in the AI, because ultimately that is human trust that you're describing. We're kind of rebuilding the whole world as it occurred for millions of years, where people trust someone in the village to tell the truth and they're gonna head to him. And we're doing this in the virtual world. That is absolutely mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, there's a lot of exciting possibilities. I mean, honestly, if you're interested in truth seeking and stuff like that, I think rather than trying to reform existing institutions, it's becoming increasingly obvious that the way forward is to build new ones and just simply leapfrog the institutions that have been compromised.
Absolutely. And I feel as excited as probably someone felt my ancestors when they moved to North America. It's a new world, and it's a world that is completely deployed where nothing was believed to exist. All right, Rocco, did you have anything else to bring tonight?
I have a question for Rocco.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay, so this contract thing you mentioned is particularly controversial. Then it creates a fork in it, and then you have a choice between trading tokens on the currency where people lie versus currency where people tell the truth. So I'm not sure. Like, I see how it works for one interaction, but there's a weirdness, I don't understand how it goes for multiple. So let's just, you had, there were three questions. Is the sky red or blue? Is the earth round or flat? And then, does the sun revolve around the earth or the other way around?
Right. So, I mean, right? Yeah, go ahead.
Second, yeah. So I put out two smart contracts at the same time. One of them, and there's just one Ethereum chain, right? And the two extant questions are Earth round or flat and sky red or blue. And you know, comes out, you know, MSNBC says red sky is racist, or blue sky is racist. You have to vote red. And the red sky contract comes up for like decision first. Half vote blue, half vote red. So I start trading on the blue because I don't want to trade on a red sky contract. But then the contract on whether the earth is round or not still exists on both chains, right? And then does that mean the world I'm on round or flat earth? And then likewise, then if after the red sky contract,
Marcel, pardon me. I've just muted you. We're just on a time limit. So can we just get a kind of 30-second summary, and then we'll let Roko answer if that's all right. Marcel, go ahead.
Sure. Okay. So I guess the main thing is, if it is the case,
I get the question. So let me just answer that. I'll try to keep it brief. The way the Augur Oracle works is it's not supposed to split every time, right? So it's supposed, you know, this is an oracle. It's supposed to work where most of the time everyone agrees and ends up voting the same way. And the way that happens is it's hierarchical, right? So, you know, you start off with a small question. You know, you have a question. You start off with a small number of people who are holders voting on it, right? So the question might be, is the Earth flat or is it round, right? And, you know, you have, let's say, 10 people voting, right? And so, you know, if people vote for flat Earth, if a significant number of people vote for flat Earth, and there are at least some people who are still voting round, then what happens is that the question will be booted up to the next level, and you'll have 100 people voting. If there's still a significant split both ways, it'll be booted up to the next level, and 1,000 people will vote. And it keeps getting booted up to more and more voters until the whole protocol, everyone who's holding this token votes on it. And if there's still disagreement at the highest level, then you get a protocol split, and you get two versions of it, right?
Wow. But so the way it works is by calling in more voters whenever it gets controversial.
When it's controversial, because most questions that an oracle will answer are not controversial, right?
Yeah.
Most questions, you know, there's no reason to disagree. You know, there's no reason to disagree. And the fact that it's a hierarchical system means that there's an incentive for people to vote correctly. Because if, you know, if you vote that the Earth is flat and you're one of the first 10, and then it goes up a few levels higher and people decide, no, the world is round, you actually get punished. You get penalized for being wrong, right? So there's an incentive to just get it right to start with. But if, like, right, but if this goes all the way to the highest level and, you know, there's still a disagreement, then there's a split in the protocol, and the people who vote for the flat Earth, they all get one version, and the people who vote for the round Earth, they get the other version. And then in subsequent questions, you know, those are now two different protocols, and people will then have to decide which one they want to use. And the one who decided to say that the Earth is flat, well, it's probably not going to get very many users, right? Because people pay to use it, right? And those payments are distributed to token holders as yield. You know, the people who are holding those are going to be holding crap, worthless, right? They're going to lose a bunch of money. So the idea of this is people have skin in the game, right?
Absolutely fascinating. I look forward to holding my Flat Earth NFT. We was there. We made it happen. We had a vote and determined that the Earth was flat. That would be quite an NFT to have, but probably on a failing blockchain.
So if I vote in a way that is counter to the majority, I am compelled to then only then have a wallet on the currency that agrees with me. So if I'm, I don't understand.
Well, if you have a I'm talking again about the Augur Oracle. If you have, you know, if you have a vote that goes all the way up to the highest level, right, and people still disagree, there's still like a 50-50 split, then you know, people who vote one way will get one version of the token, and the people who vote the other way will get the other version, and those are now two separate protocols. I mean, they're still both on the same blockchain, right? But they're separate protocols. People now have to choose which one they're going to use. So somebody else comes in with an oracle question that they want answered. They actually have to choose which oracle they're going to use. There's version one and version two now, right?
So they're going to say, I have a question number 5 to ask them. Will I ask them to those who said flat Earth was real, or those who said globe Earth was real? So basically you've created two systems of answers.
Yes, right. And it's much more likely that people will use the one that says the Earth is round, right?
Yeah.
And you may have a situation where people create a sort of woke oracle that just always answers politically correctly. And it might even be the case that the woke oracle is more profitable because more people want to use it. But the thing is, you know, it gets split off, right? So yeah. Anyone who wants to ask a question and they want to get the woke answer to it will use the woke oracle, right? But you can now create a non-woke oracle. And if people in the non-woke oracle start kind of, you know, voting for woke answers and it splits again, well, you know, you already have one woke oracle that's doing very well. If you now have a second one, that's probably going to be less valuable than the one that's telling the truth, even if the one that's telling the truth is less valuable than the politically correct one, because that's the way everyone, you know, a lot of people want that one. But, you know, I mean, obviously it's not, you know, if everyone in the entire world is woke and only wants to hear woke answers, and crypto is not going to solve that for you. But if there's at least some community of people who want to hear non-woke answers, they want to hear the truth, you know, you could use a system like this to get true answers most of the time. And, you know, yeah, occasionally you would have...
Well, it's not even a matter of, like, world woke, because then if I say... That means that when I create a smart contract, if, you know, every time I do it, I'm essentially creating a detailed political confession of all of the non... Because I'm implicitly endorsing all of the non-woke answers that were given by the one that I'm using.
Right.
But, like,
yeah.
I'm constantly...
Right, you've chosen to use the one that tells the truth.
Wow, and so you have a whole history of what you demand. You are trusting those who said yes to COVID, no to the vaccine, yes to this, yes to that. Rocco, that was absolute poetry. Is that currently available? Is that something that's developed or in development?
Well, unfortunately, there's a kind of sad story with Augur, which is that it was kind of founded in 2016. And there was a lot of hype about it. The founders cashed out with tokens because it was kind of bid up a lot. And nobody's really done anything with it since. Nobody uses it. There are no blockchain applications at the moment that really use oracles to decide real world events. Like, there are a lot of oracles that decide, you know, price feeds, like what's the price of Ethereum, but there aren't really many oracles for real world events. In fact, I don't think there are, well, there are some. So there are some prediction market platforms, and they have oracles that will deliver answers. But, you know, the Augur dream hasn't really made it. And I think one reason for that is just the stuff we were talking about earlier with scalability. Like, you know, Ethereum in 2016 was not very fast in the sense that you just couldn't have that many people using it. It had, like, I don't know, 30 transactions per second or something. So lack of supporting infrastructure, bad incentives with founders getting to cash out pre-product, and potentially some other things that I don't know about have caused that to not come to fruition. But, you know, I mean, it's blockchain. If you really want to build it, you can go build it yourself.
Absolutely fantastic. I mean, you make me dream. I would like to reawaken this and make it happen, perhaps with less fees, less... I mean, at some point, it gets easy enough that you can involve millions of people without blocking it. I'm sure that will step back into existence at some point. Rocco, this was Per Poetry. Marcel, thank you for your questions. We have to move on. This is a new show. It was absolutely mind-blowing. Thank you so much for coming tonight. All right. Elia Schaefer has been having trouble with YouTube. YouTube is a wild platform. Planning my exit. You can have 500,000 subs, but you'll gain no traction. Even the last video I put out got age-restricted for showing a trans person in a bra. It was a dude in a bra, not even passing. They hid the video and gave me a warning. It's allowed on TikTok and others have posted the video, but since I was critical, I got hit. Over the last 3 years, I've lost 7 figures of revenue over advertisers bailing for things I've said. YouTube keeps hitting. In this case, somewhere at the intersection of nudity and trans and questions of discrimination. Too bad for Elia Schaefer. But as I say to young people, if you're starting on the web business, YouTube is not a place to go. They're going to get rid of you once they're tired of you. They're going to get rid of you once you're too much trouble for them. They're not even going to care. They have a flow of creators to replace you with. Fuck YouTube. CCG Bryson said yesterday while Nick Fuentes was being unbanned from Twitter, he said, bro, Nick Fuentes is so hilarious, he's going off right now. So we don't know exactly what happened that led to the banning of Nick Fuentes, because it seems that very few people have been able to keep trace, partly because of the censorship. People have difficulty retweeting, and perhaps some of his Twitter space appearances were not recorded at all, or they were deleted after. So apparently Nick Fuentes, on his first day after being unbanned within 24 hours, went around Twitter spaces yesterday night and started talking about provocative subjects, of course, subjects that we've been covering here on the show, but perhaps did it in a way that triggered the Twitter feathers. He mentioned the problem of representation in the media industry and overrepresentation of certain groups. As I was saying at the beginning of the show, this is annoying to me. Elon Musk must find a resolution to this. We have to make it so that a rule on Twitter applies to all races and all genders and all protected categories. If you want to do this, you're going to have to go after all of the leftists who complain that there are too many white people here and that white people are dominating society and that white people this and that. If you delete all of these people and if you ban them all, then I'm fine with you banning Nick Fuentes. But the fact is, we all know that Nick Fuentes was most likely banned because of the specific problem he was talking about and that it's not a fair application of the Twitter rules. If I wake up tomorrow morning and I see all leftists who complain for affirmative action to happen because they feel that they are in a white-dominated society, if all of them are banned, I'll be fine with Nick being banned. But this is unjust. We need to have a system that basically obfuscates the race that it's about, the gender that it's about, and the review should merely happen on the question of, is this statement in violation of our rules? So Nick Fuentes shared on his Twitter account, he shared apparently a graph that is typically going around on the internet that documents who in the media industry and how do they identify, and that seemed to cross the line for Twitter. We now find ourselves with Nick Fuentes' account suspended. Rocco is still a speaker, still raising his hand. How are you doing, Rocco?
Thanks, Jean-François. I think I know already which group this must be referring to. Many of my friends are from this particular ethnic group. I respect them a lot, but probably the reason that Nick was banned for saying something that the more zealous members of this group don't like is because this group has significant financial power, and Elon is probably somewhat under pressure to not piss them off in order to keep Twitter running. I don't even have to say what the group is. Everyone knows.
Yeah, well, Rocco, since this is my show, I'm going to lead it because I don't like when someone comes and talks about these subjects and doesn't master the full way of laying them out and being fair and neutral about it. So no offense to you, I muted you. These subjects are too edgy for me to give control to anyone on how we cover this. So because I want to be in line with all the rules of all the platforms I'm on. So no offense to you, and you were really great today, but I'm going to keep covering this on my own. Viva Frey was questioning Viva Frey himself, who I believe self-identifies as a Jew, says, what's going on, Elon Musk? Twitter seems to have gone from freedom of speech, not freedom of reach, to outright censorship in no time at all. Is this article accurate? And so this is on another issue, the issue of the Indian censorship that has been happening at Twitter. And shamefully, the companies are complying with their demands and have taken down numerous videos and posts. Apparently, it was a documentary, The Act of Censorship, Wiping Away Allegations of Crimes Against Humanity Committed by a Foreign Leader. That's a worrying tone for Twitter, especially in light of its new management. So there is a lot of pressure on Elon. Elon has actually answered in person to Viva Frey. He said, first, I've heard it is not possible for me to fix every aspect of Twitter worldwide overnight while still running Tesla and SpaceX, among other things. So basically, Elon here is not saying that, is saying that the censorship we've seen on in India, he's aware of it, but he's so limited in his actions and so busy with other things like Tesla, SpaceX, that he cannot fix it in the moment. Very interesting. Perhaps Elon will have a long-term effect here and is planning something to make things fairer. And I will tell Elon, if you want some help from me, I've been thinking about these questions, having been censored myself for news coverage and relevant news items. I've been censored for years and years. And I've thought about it very deeply. So if you want a true neutral system, I can design it for you, and I would be absolutely willing to do volunteer work for you, Elon, for Twitter, because I believe in your project. Now, to come back with what Rocco was mentioning, is Elon under leverage? Is Elon under control? A lot of people have been commenting that him having had to go through debt deals put him in a tight spot, constrains him in a corner, that he may be cornered in a way where, and I like the suggestion of this tweet. Is Elon really telling us that he's too busy with Tesla and SpaceX? Or is Elon telling us that because he has Tesla and SpaceX, he is subject to extortion? Let's reread this tweet here. He says, first, I've heard it is not possible for me to fix every aspect of Twitter worldwide overnight while still running Tesla and SpaceX, among other things. He may be here dog whistling to us, as long as I'm still the CEO of valuable companies, they're holding me by the balls. Because what happens if India says Elon is a criminal? What happens if Europe decides that Elon is a radical extremist of the far right because he lets people of the far right speak on Twitter? It's possible that what Elon has to do is either not be the CEO of Twitter or not be the CEO of SpaceX and Tesla. Because it seems that if he wants to continue the project of Twitter being a free speech platform, he's going to have zero extortion. And Elon is kind of the contrary of what I've done in my life. In my life, I've set myself in a zero extortion situation. I own nothing. No one can come at me. Like, you would literally just have to send someone kill me if you wanted to get to me, because I'm not seizable. See, the only thing I own stops at my skin right here. The limit of my skin is the limit of my ownership. That is a zero extortion situation. Elon is the exact opposite. He's the most seizable guy in the entire freaking universe. Everything that he owns can be taken away from him if he goes to free speech. And so I think this tweet is probably the most important tweet to get into the mindset of Elon Musk here. I believe that Elon Musk is currently under extortion, currently being threatened, that perhaps he's not going to get NASA contracts if he goes on with his free speech. He's not going to get Tesla credits or whatever, and they want to crash his company. Hopefully, Elon has already planned for this. Hopefully, he can resolve this and put himself in a position where he's not subject to this. On Gab, people were commenting on this, on what's happening with Twitter. People are frustrated that we already have bannings coming back. Bolin was saying, Twitter, big tech platforms will never become free speech platform. He reminds that the statement of Elon Musk about freedom of speech but not freedom of reach was taken directly from Jonathan Greenblatt of the ADL. And so that is something that's weighing on my mind. Is Elon serious about what he wants to do? Because let me tell you, Elon, you could get us to Mars or no, but to be honest, the greatest achievement you could do is to unlock free speech forever for humanity. You'd be the only one who's ever done it. It would be infinitely more important than anything you could do on Mars, believe me. Like, I know it's spectacular. Get on another planet, get those little videos in the Mars background, maybe build a base, but it's not going to lead to much. We're not going to colonize Mars, Elon. We're stuck in the sewers that the planet Earth is. And if you could make it a little better so that we can breathe a little oxygen of freedom, that would be fucking appreciated, Elon. And I can help you. I can help you if you want. James Melville was reporting about Bill Gates. look at what Bill Gates is saying. The people on Twitter space might not hear him, so perhaps I'll just summarize what he says. He says, we didn't understand that it's a fairly low fatality rate and that it's a disease mainly in the elderly, kind of like flu is, although a bit different than that. Bill Gates is trying to have a revisionist history of what we knew at the beginning of the pandemic. Are you kidding me? We didn't know it's a low fatality rate that mainly attacks the elderly. We knew this. I covered this back in February 2020. Are you fucking kidding me, Bill Gates? He's trying to justify how we knew so little. We knew so little. Bill Gates, don't try to reconstruct this story. We have the live streams. We have the copies of those live streams. Just as a news guy, I was just interpreting the news and I was seeing it all play in front of our eyes. Rocco has his hand raised, and hopefully we move on to another subject than what we were talking about. Rocco, how are you doing?
Hey, well, let me just say something that's hopefully not too controversial. Free speech, like, there's a sort of Western ideal of free speech, but I think the reality of the world that we're living in is that speech is considered by many to be a weapon, a form of power, and, you know, the principle of you can literally say anything you want is probably not the most strategic thing to do. It's probably more strategic to, you know, have a little bit of freedom, at least for now, and then maybe later you can have a little bit more, right?
Absolutely. I agree with you, because people go after Elon and try to evaluate what he's doing from a perfect idealist position. The reality is we have to get the ground running, and if we can unlock some voices, eventually freedom will multiply. Those voices will eventually fight for other voices to be liberated, and we'll get there. But we have to get there progressively. You're right. There's no other solution. And the game that you just laid out is the very sad fatality that basically the censors are stronger. They're stronger, and they were stronger, at least on the internet. They've been stronger for way too long. All right. I see that Richard Spencer has been joining us. Richard, I am penetrating your world, the world of Twitter space. Isn't this amazing? I'm so happy to see you among us. And I don't know if you are able to unmute yourself and speak, but you are welcome here.
Richard, if you can hear us, just making sure. Richard, can you hear us? Just unmute your mic if you're able to speak. I'm just relaying what JF said in case there's audio issues. But if not, if you can't unmute, we'll just continue along.
All right. Whenever he figures out, I thought that Richard would teach me stuff about Twitter Spaces. But now he is unmuted.
Someone called my phone. I exited the space for a bit there.
All right. So how have you been doing? I'm discovering your castle, your world, your universe, Twitter Spaces. What a fantastic world that is developing that I didn't really connect to before.
Well, yes, this is my domain. I get to have long, consensual, respectful conversations with left-wing women.
Really?
It's basically a dream.
Really? They are flocking to your Twitter space?
Well, they kind of are, I guess. I was joking a little bit there,
Okay, we are losing, unfortunately, we are losing the audio on Richard. Twitter space is so ridiculous. Like, you touch the side of your mouth with your phone and it hangs up. Okay, are you back, Richard?
I'm back. Yes, okay. Let me text this person who just called so he doesn't. Give me a sec. Okay. Yeah, no, I have to say, I like doing the calls with supporters where, you know, we're all on the same page and we could be totally honest and go deep on things. But yeah, you know, Twitter Spaces, it's like the one place where you can have a respectful, legitimate conversation with all sorts of people. And I think it actually is like the marketplace of ideas and stuff. I mean that genuinely.
Yeah, and it used to be other things. YouTube was kind of a marketplace of ideas at some point, but they lost it and Twitter won it. Is it possible that the reason we get some respect here is because a Twitter account is something, it's kind of an identity, even if it doesn't have your real name? But certainly if it does have your real name, you want to be respectful and well-seen.
Yes, definitely. I think that's part of it, yeah.
That is fantastic. So I see that you've been commenting on the Nick Fuentes events. We were also covering this just before you came in. Nick Fuentes rebanned from Twitter. What are your thoughts on this? Is this a failure of Elon to honor a conception of freedom of speech, or did he just was he just a provocative Zoomer?
Well, it's both. I mean, I heard that he was dropping some N-bombs on a space or something like that.
Oh,
and that strikes me as you're just trying to get banned. Now, I didn't hear those. I hopped into his space last night for like 5 minutes, and but you know that's kind of not defensible. But I suggested in my discussion this afternoon, we went off into all sorts of highfalutin topics, but we started off talking about the Fuentes thing, and I suggested this afternoon, I think there's some dynamic at play because Elon, you know, his words are fair enough and they're good. You know, if it's lawful speech, it's welcome here, basically. Free speech is important. That means tolerating some rough edges. All that is totally fair, obviously. But I sense there's some kind of agenda at play with Elon where he isn't just tolerating edgy accounts. He's promoting and communicating with and becoming friends with all this like alt-light edgelord type
yes.
people. And so there's a kind of agenda. I was suggesting that it's a bit of a let's recreate 2016 Trump agenda. And I think Nick Fuentes, I mean, I guess this is a compliment in a way. I mean, I don't think he fits into that. I think a few years ago, Fuentes probably did fit into that agenda. And they thought that he was a better version of me. He was, you know, more wholesome and innocent and American and Christian
optical.
And all that kind of stuff. Optical. Yes.
Yeah.
But I think now Fuentes, you know, for better and for worse, because he said things that are totally unnecessarily outrageous or because he's authentic, he's not viewed as a team player. He's not part of the team. This is speculation, but it's informed speculation. And I can see this happening because I do think that there's an agenda at play. I don't think Elon Musk merely loves free speech and is willing to jeopardize so much of his wealth on that behalf. I think he wants something out of it.
I think and you are putting your fingers on it. And just like you, I don't know exactly what it is. But
sorry if I can just...
Rocco? okay, well, we lost him. I will continue what I was about to say. I think that Elon is trying to develop leverage. I think he's maybe on a quest of vengeance. And he's like, he's frustrated at someone, and he's like, I'm going to reawaken the things that you didn't want. Perhaps he's frustrated at the ADL. Perhaps it's even bigger than this, and it has economical and political complications. But he's pissed off inside his heart, and he's decided that he would frustrate the left or frustrate whoever he wants to frustrate with the worst thing that they could possibly think of, a change of the internet back to the state of 2016. Elon is hitting the reset button to piss off someone. Another thing that I think about Elon is there's his father. His father is based as fuck, and I don't know exactly what's the relation between the two. Is his father highly influential of him? But when I see his father comment and say, Elon is currently making himself enemies, and I don't think he fully realized the extent of his enemies, I realize that his father understands the world pretty much like you and I, Richard. And I'm wondering if this was not transmitted in some way to Elon.
Well, yes. I mean, this is something we also talked about a few hours ago on MySpace.
Yeah, I saw you had one.
Right. I mean, it's... I did not research Elon intensely before this past year. But if I were to just give a general impression of Elon, it was, oh, he's, you know, he makes these electric cars. He's kind of a Silicon Valley guy. He's probably a liberal, and he's selling these luxury vehicles to other liberals. And he's getting massive subsidies to the tune of billions of dollars from governments. You know, think of that what you will. But he's found a new base. So he's now become the leader of the opposition, like globally. Like the conservatives are fanboying out over Elon. And that, yes, that is a base. And they will defend you and they'll lie for you and, you know, fan you as you're carried by or something like that. But it's not really the base you want for other things he wants to achieve. I mean, he's jeopardizing Tesla's brand. He's just jeopardizing the subsidies if he takes this too far. And it's really not the base, like fans of Kin.com and Cat Turd, I don't know what to say. Like, unless you're running for office or something, which would be, I guess, illegal in most cases for Elon, I just don't see it. I don't know why he would link up with this crew, the alt-right and MAGA. It's just not the base that he wants for his other objectives.
Yes. So definitely he's in a transitionary period. And it's very hard to just imagine that it's out of pure naivete and pure, yeah, let's make everything happen. There's something I can't quite put my finger on it, but we'll see it unfold as it happens. But yeah, it's like Kim.com. You're talking about the fact that he appears on Twitter Spaces with Kim.com.
Yes, and he's discussing Rick and Morty with Tim Pool and things like that. I mean, there's an element to it which it's like you're just a nerdy teenager. I mean, it's just if I were close to him, I would be advising him to do almost the opposite of this. And I would also suggest that his behavior is not that great for people like you and me. I think it would almost be better for us if we had a kind of like wishy-washy liberal centrist in charge of Twitter who believes in free speech and thus wants to maintain things.
Really?
And
I feel different. I'm so enthusiastic about Elon. I feel like this is exactly the kind of personality that can do amazing things. And what you describe is amazing. This striding between naivete and 6D chess, but improving the world for real. I'm starting to actually believe that Elon Musk is something like a true leader and that somehow he deserves his spot at the top of the world.
Well, you have drunk the Kool-Aid, from what I can tell. You drank the Kool-Aid man, in fact. He burst into your room and you just drank him. Yeah, that's remarkable.
Richard, I think the idea that a liberal centrist would go with free speech on any kind of controversial issue is a whole different bottle of Kool-Aid. Let's be real here.
Okay. But Nixon has to go to China sometimes. They've got to crack the nut, and they have to do it right. And again, I still don't think, I think him pushing things like this, I mean, granted, he is banning people. He just banned Nick Fuentes. He's banned Ye for reasons that are not legitimate, in my opinion, according to his words. The promotion of this kind of thing, I think it's going to generate a huge backlash. And I think it could turn out much worse for us.
You think that they would reconvince Elon Musk to go back to even higher censorship or equivalent censorship?
No, I mean, I think Elon Musk seems to be in serious financial jeopardy. I mean, it is what it is. And yes, they could see this little experiment in a right-wing guy in charge of a right-wing edgelord in charge of what is in effect the digital public sphere, and there could be a backlash against it in all sorts of ways. Now, I think Twitter, again, as I've said to you many times, Jeff, I mean, the weird thing about Twitter is that it doesn't have a huge user base, yet it remains, in my opinion, the most important social media network by far.
Absolutely.
And so,
it's like where we have our feed of Associated Press. It's like we're the live feed of the world.
Exactly. Yeah, those are good ways of describing it. And so I think it will stick around almost despite all of this. But nevertheless, I could see him generating a backlash by promoting this stuff. I mean, look, he promoted a conspiracy theory about the attack on Nancy Pelosi's husband. He's, you know, doing all this stuff with like bad faith foreign actors like Kim.com. I mean, at some point you look at this and it's like, this isn't worth it, bro. Like, it's just stop.
I'm totally the opposite. I'm super okay. happy that Kim.com has a status in a touch with a kind of mainstream personality, because I think he influenced the history of the internet. And I look at it from an anthropological perspective. To me, Kim.com is a special human that in a just world stands in the hall of fame of influencing the internet, of making things happen differently. And so to me, it's like a historical person. You wouldn't judge them on everything that they've done and not want to socialize with them. You would just recognize this person is such a giant. He deserves a place at the table. And that's what Elon has done. And I think it creates a beautiful future world.
Okay.
But Richard, that was absolutely beautiful. Thank you so much for coming and delivering your thoughts. I think you are giving a lot of things to think about. And is Elon extorted, basically? Is Elon in a corner, or is he free? That I wonder yes. about. That's exactly what I wonder about.
Yes. And nothing I said justifies banning Nick Fuentes. I actually don't think he should be banned. I mean, someone should tell him to stop. I mean, if it's true, tell him, don't say the N-word on his face. I mean, for God's sake,
yeah.
Grow up, man. But nevertheless, no, I do think he should be platformed.
Absolutely. I think that Elon basically hasn't had the time to fully implement a system. Can we have a system in which people can learn what not to do? Because
right
now we have bannings, and it's banning immediately or whatever they decide. Why don't we have something like a prison for 1 week and something automated that doesn't have to take so much human attention? And that people can come back eventually. I agree that there is lots of fairness issue with what Twitter is doing right now.
Yes.
All right, Richard, thank you so much for calling. I love
yeah, sure.
your world. I love your Twitter space world. In fact, I'm thinking, did you see the title of the Twitter space? It's the public space. Doesn't that evoke to you some memories?
Yes, absolutely. It evokes memories. Maybe you should do the public space on Twitter.
That's what I'm planning. I'm planning to transfer my show on Twitter space eventually, progressively. I believe that Elon one day will make it a live streaming platform, Twitter space. And yes. I think it's a great home.
Right. And get in early on that. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Absolutely. Richard, thank you so much.
Sure. Talk bye to you later. Bye.
Wow. It's so great. We get to speak to intelligent people. Rocco came here, delivered some stuff I didn't know about crypto. Richard comes. Absolutely great thinking. Oh, my God. itch slap. what's the status of the show on Twitter Space? I see that we have more audience than we've ever had.
Yes, it's going very, very well. I just wanted to add kind of two brief things. The kind of when the bigger accounts join, a lot of their followers would join. And normally, you know, birds of a feather flock together. If the big accounts are intelligent, their followers will be intelligent. So
so I guess that when Richard showed up in the space, all of his female followers of the left flocked in. So I guess we have our, our highest percentage of woman audience ever.
100%. And I can vouch for this gentleman, Jean-Charles. I don't know how much time we have left in the show, but he does have his hand up. If we have time, we can go to him.
All right, Jean-Charles, what's up?
Well, thank you very much. It's Slap. Hello, Jean-François. People thought I was you when I first came on Frog Twitter. You know, but now we're two French-Canadian on Twitter. Well, you're not a non actually.
That is a deep JF accent you got there.
Yeah, people will stop thinking that I'm you now that you're back. And you're a bit of a legend on this side of Twitter. Anyways, I was just going to say about Elon that I think that what he's doing is trying to position himself as a contrarian oligarch in American affairs. And purchasing Twitter, he bought basically the central nervous system of information, because a lot of what is published in the press actually comes from Twitter feeds, or at least circulates more on Twitter feeds than with sort of regular audience. And also, we happen to now possess a lot of compromising informations on his potential rivals, on his enemies, on institutions hostile to his interests. So I think that the move is obviously not only about freedom of speech, but also about power.
Absolutely. I think it's a great view. This makes me think, I like to keep a log of what people are pissed about, because that determines so much of what you do in life. And I think that Elon is pissed at the media for saying that Teslas don't advance very, very far, basically. I think he's still pissed from these car reviews. And, you know, he had this project back then when the media started giving bad coverage to Tesla cars. He had the project of having a website that would allow people to review the truthfulness of a given media. And he wanted basically to crash the reputation of all media. By buying Twitter, he's doing exactly this, and in a much better way, in a way.
Yeah, the other thing is how much Elon actually spending of his own money on Twitter. I'm not aware of the exact details, but he borrowed the money to buy it, and he has to pay interest on the debt. But if Twitter is successful, I mean, he doesn't necessarily lose any money, right?
Yeah, it's very hard to understand. I don't have a full understanding, and I don't even think that the information is public so that we could have a full layout. But certainly, he has had to take some debt, but that debt is collateralized in so many ways, and that it's hard to figure out, is Elon in a tough situation or is he in a good situation? He mentioned a couple of weeks ago that bankruptcy was not off the table, that he could be headed for this. It's weird that you buy a company and you run it into bankruptcy immediately, but it can make sense in certain situations. There's also the other investors, and exactly how much power do they have? It's all questions that I don't have answers to. Busted at the post-millennial, a far-left activist says trans surgeries aren't happening. Oops. Let's see here. We have to reconnect. So somehow it still happens. I need to figure out. This BlueStacks cuts me out from the Twitter space. Anyways, I'm back. At the post-millennial, they were saying far-left activist says trans surgeries aren't happening to kids, gets immediately debunked. All across the United States and Canada, gender surgeons are performing radical surgeries on minors who believe themselves to be transgender, and yet a surprising number of trans activists seem to be unaware of this happening. There's so much a lack of awareness on the left, Scott Adams was mentioning, oh, I didn't know that the vaccine doesn't stop transmission. Now we learn some trans activists didn't know that intervention on children are rising. Absolutely revolting, and it's a result of the context of censorship. They are deprived of information. It's like if you can't follow the truth and you let the system determine what you hear, you're gonna be beside reality very quick. Justin Bieber sold his rights to his entire catalog for a staggering figure. Justin Bieber has sold the entire music that he owns, that he produced up to now, for $200 million. The investment company Hypnosis Song Management has taken over all publishing copyrights and royalties. However, what he does going forward will be owned by himself. So basically everything in the past, it's all owned by a company. They do that very often because these songs are played so much on radio and they're consumed so much, they generate so much sales, that and streamings and whatever, that they can count on them bringing back the money. So I guess I'm happy for Justin Bieber, and but I don't know where he will be headed now that he has kind of a new freedom. He will have these $200 million and he's just going to start producing. Will he change his art? Will it be less pop? Will it be, I don't know. I don't know, but it's exciting for Justin Bieber. I was talking to Neil deGrasse Tyson on Twitter. He was saying most disaster movies begin with authorities ignoring scientists to warn of impending doom. Reality appears to be no different. And I loved what Stephen Robinson told Neil deGrasse Tyson. He said, no shit, read the revolutionary phenotype. I said to Neil, it's one thing to observe this. It's another thing to actively participate to it. I wrote The Revolutionary Phenotype in 2018 to warn of the massive dangers of gene editing for human civilization, and you've been doing exactly that, Neil Tyson, ignoring it. It's time that people read this book, The Revolutionary Phenotype. I warn that it is very dangerous to do the kind of genetic editing we're starting to do, and that it will direct our civilization toward absolute self-destruction. Nothing will survive it, other than a machine that controls humans. Don't do it and read The Revolutionary Phenotype. Elon Musk was asked about the status of his debt, which we discussed at length throughout the show, and he denies. He denies being in trouble and looking for $3 billion to pay off Twitter debt. He answered no to a tweet that was saying Elon Musk explores raising up to $3 billion to pay off Twitter debt, Musk discussed selling up to $3 billion in new Twitter shares, and Musk says no. So that's a clear denial, it seems. So it seems that Elon Musk is not trying to dilute his ownership of Twitter. But that would be one option that he has. He could say, all right, you are now the owner of 10% of Twitter or 20% of Twitter. But it would be in his interest to do so once he has restored Twitter, because I feel that the engagement on Twitter currently is at peak, or it's been at peak since he took over it. And I think that this will show up in how people value Twitter and how people are willing to pay for it going forward. Go away, says Jeff. Maybe he sold his catalog so that he can go full red pill. He's cashed out before he gets canceled by the left. He learned from the mistakes of, yeah, this is a possibility. I don't think that Justin Bieber is about to go full Kanye West, but you never know when they have nothing to lose. I mean, this is the beauty. Justin Bieber wakes up tomorrow morning, he's a free man. He's a free man with $200 million. Who knows what it will lead to? You know, perhaps Justin Bieber has a secret red-pilled life. There is nothing that he can be debanked from. He could buy Bitcoin with this, and it would be his forever. And he could talk about controversial stuff, but I don't see why he would, because he doesn't seem to be particularly interested in these subjects. The most controversial thing I've heard Justin Bieber say was I'm a pop star, not a doctor, na-na-na-na, suggesting somehow that he wasn't able to distribute drugs because of his status as a pop star. He couldn't become a gangster. Is Justin Bieber about to become a gangster? I don't know. The game is over and they have lost. That's an article on Zero Edge. The Guardian on January 15, 2023 published the most perfect piece of new normal nostalgia that ever was or could be. Coronavirus. People aren't taking this seriously. Experts say US COVID surge is big risk. This piece may be studied as a platonic form. Nothing could more perfectly demonstrate the inability of the COVID fear porn publishers to let go of the narrative. There are people who still follow a news cycle years later, and they're still trying to push a massively fearful discourse around COVID. I think we've been through it enough that people aren't afraid very much. I think that this will not have much success. Out of control tipflation infuriates customers. In a post-COVID world, the emergence of digital kiosk systems has allowed businesses to offer consumers a new tipping option. I've seen those tipping options, and you now click on a screen, and it used to be that 15%, 20% was the max. Some of these, they now go up to 25%. So the Zero Hedge article argues that is a way to have a hidden form of inflation play into the expansion of cost for the same thing that you would normally pay for. Hitchslap, do we have a speaker? I see that Stella Umbrella is a speaker in the space. Charlotte is also Hello. There.
Hello?
Yes, Stella, we're on a, you are live talking to JF. You can ask him any question that you want regarding science or anything else. just keep it brief if you can. But yeah, go ahead. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I want to apologize for my baby earlier, but
it's all good because I heard the baby while Richard was speaking, and I thought, you know what, isn't this great that there are families with us, they care for their baby. I'm all for being very plastic and tolerant on you guys' baby making activities, because I think we shouldn't push away kids from the public space. I think it's great that there are parents, they're laying on the bed with their children, and they're also listening to the JF Twitter space.
Yeah, I had to leave though, because she stopped crying, and I had to walk her around and like sing in a really low, bassy voice.
Yes.
And I guess she liked that. Mom has all these songs that she sings to her, so I started singing them like three octaves lower. But I just want to say that I've been listening since the vaccine thing started, because my company, my boss like approached me and said, so why aren't you getting it? Because like 99.8% of the rest of the company was getting it, and I was the last person to not get it in the whole company basically. And after that, I started kind of throwing my weight around the company, because I thought that I always had this anxiety that I could get fired at any time, but I basically forced their hand by not getting the vaccine, and now it's like feel like I can get away with anything. And
you realize your power and your value, and that is the most beautiful thing—the self-empowerment to say, "I will impose my own condition on my life, and going forward, if that means being denied 99 opportunities, I'll take the one that's left, and I'll make a success out of it."
Yeah, I got like one skill at this company that is like irreplaceable, and the old guy that used to do it is like on death row. Yeah. And I'm the only person that learned how to fix the thing that I love it. I have a gaming computer that I put behind a trash can, and when I'm not doing like when I'm all done with my work, I get away with playing Half-Life 2.
Very nice. What kind of CPU do you have? Is that a super big computer?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I in my cubicle, I spaced the desks like really far. So the trash can used to have a little tiny nook, but I made the trash can nook like three times as big. And I just put my computer under the trash can. Okay. And I turn off all the RGB. And I'm playing there's this game. You know what, JF, you would love it actually for your gaming night. It's called G-String, and it's like a I know you don't like Korean movies, Netflix stuff, because it's like B tier, but this game is like way better than Half-Life 2. The name makes it seem like it's some kind of joke, but it's, you look up G-String Half-Life 2 mod, it was just released, and it was being made by like one guy for 10 years. Like,
it's a first person shooter.
Yeah, it's similar to Half-Life 2. It's got all the same mechanics, but
I don't know about Half-Life. So is it like a Doom? Is it like Duke Nukem 3D?
It's more like, have you ever played Counter-Strike?
I played it once, yes.
It feels like that, because that's the same kind of Source Engine.
So real gun and real real feeling.
Yeah, real physics. Like, the craziest thing about video games is when you encounter an obstacle that you in real life could get over, like an in-game fence that you know that if you were in the game world, you could get over it.
Yeah.
That always makes me angry. But in the Source Engine games like Half-Life and G-String, it's really realistic. Like, if you were put in that world, it feels exactly like how it would be if you were put in the world.
So it's a big problem to step over the fence, and it's an investment.
No, but in this game, you are challenged to really go through the environment. You know what? I would tell you the best way to get into this game is just watch someone on YouTube talk about it for a minute, and you'll see why this game is awesome. G-String. But
I'll give it a try.
I don't want to take up any more of your time. I really love what you do. I'm an Odyssey super fan. You got me into Odyssey. I almost never check YouTube anymore. Oh man, keep up the good work. Your book is amazing.
That is beautiful. Your theory is amazing. Beautiful to hear, and it's so healthy. If you're just on Odyssey, you know that you have control over what you get. That is beautiful. Stella, thank you so much for calling.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Thank you very much.
And I see that Charlotte is here. Charlotte, are you there?
Shall I just unmute and say hello if you're able to? Go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. I was just in the middle of brushing my teeth, and I didn't want to...
Okay.
Sound disgusting. Give me a second.
It's amazing how we get into people's everyday private life. Someone was having trouble with the baby, clicking on mute. Charlotte is brushing her teeth. People are living with this Twitter space everywhere in their house. That is so amazing. While Charlotte figures out her oral hygiene, 6 on-chain metrics suggesting Bitcoin is a generational buying opportunity. 6 tried and tested on-chain metrics are repeating patterns last seen at the bottom of the past 3 bear markets. I don't know if we're at the total bottom, but I told you guys it's not irrational to have bought Bitcoin 1 month ago. That's what I was telling you. And it's not irrational to buy it now. There may be a little dip coming. I don't know. But in any case, we are headed toward the bull run, and if you think at it from a multi-year perspective, it won't change much. I'm personally fully into Bitcoin. Hitch slap, what's up?
Thank you. I just want to say 2 things. Everybody listening, please follow JF. He does this show. He has this show the same time every day on Odyssey, but also he'll be doing more and more of these Twitter spaces. So if you want to catch the Twitter spaces, please follow him. Also, we still have more spots left than the speakers. So we are heading towards the end of the show, but definitely request if you want to speak. And that's all I wanted to say. And I just wanted to ask Charlotte as well, just I'm not sure if she's finished brushing her perfectly straight white teeth. But we had a lot of comments about you yesterday, Charlotte, very popular, or the other day, I should say. People mentioning that the reason the sun was hot was because you were in its orbit. Quite the flattering statement. I don't hear that one often. So just whenever you can come back, just wanted to know your thoughts on that. And then if you can say hi to JF, go ahead, if you're able to.
Hi, JS. Yeah, no, that was very flattering indeed, those comments. I feel entirely unworthy of that. But, you know, I was laughing the other day, Hitch, because, you know, I feel like I've done a lot at university and I do well for myself in my career. But anytime I speak to you, it's always my experience of being a tequila girl. And I feel like I always come off as super dumb, so I'm enjoying some of the slightly more highbrow conversation in here tonight.
Charlotte, I take full responsibility, and you always have the chance to correct me, override me, you know, kind of show why my kind of perceptions are kind of out of line. But I can confirm you're very intelligent. I spoke to you in many spaces. You've got a lot of good stuff to add. You've owned a few people with your interventions. So, can confirm, very intelligent, very high IQ. I'm going to do my very quick estimate. I'm going to put you at the 125 to 130 range, in my view, at least 125. That's my stance. I'm sticking to it.
You're very, very flattering. Thank you very much. I'm gonna keep that as my number, even though that's potentially not what it is.
All right, and I see that Obvious Sock Puppet has joined us. Hello, Obvious Sock Puppet.
Hey, g'day, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing good. Your audio is a little rough, so if you want to just tell us quickly what you wanted to talk about tonight, we'll try to limit the discomfort of our ears.
Yeah, sorry, guys. I'm just driving through the outback, so I'm a bit rough. I'll pull over so you guys don't get so much disturbance. But, my question is, I saw that Sargon of Akkad came back on Twitter. Was it a couple of weeks ago or something like that? Have you had much contact with him since the big debate with Richard Spencer a few years ago now?
I haven't spoken to him at all. It's amazing. I haven't spoken to him since his Lotus Eaters days. And I find it quite fascinating who he became, because you would think that someone like Sargon of Akkad would double down on, hey, I got banned from Twitter for like 5 years. I'm going to come back and I'm going to be the same guy that I was. But Sargon of Akkad rather cucked out. And that is fascinating to me. I wouldn't have expected it from him. He's not engaging anymore on any sort of edgy subject. He is totally like, he's given victory to the left. And he said, all right, I'm not going to be talking about any of these. I'm not going to be engaging with any of the people that you punished me for engaging with. And that is so cucked that I'm just shocked. I didn't expect this from someone like him. I would have expected him to just drop his big balls on the table and say, hey, I don't give a shit. I'm a classical liberal. I speak to whoever I want. You guys can go fuck yourself. But that's not what I got.
So he's basically a Tory now. Is that right?
Yeah, basically he has softened. He has been punished by censorship, and instead of doubling down as he comes back with glory, he is another man. He is an aged Tory conservative man that I don't recognize as the Sargon I spoke to years ago.
That's quite sad. No worries. I'll let you guys get on with the show, but see you on Twitter Space.
Thank you so much for calling. And we had the Holistic One. Did you have anything to add, Holistic One?
Just unmute. Go ahead if you're able to.
Yeah, is it okay if I hang out here for a sec? I don't have good service at the moment. I'm outside.
Okay. Well, you can call us back at any time, but I'm headed toward finishing the show. So was there anything you wanted to bring quick?
I guess I'll say quickly on Sargon. I don't know what he's up to these days. I haven't kept track of him pretty much, I guess, years. But I remember one time he had this meetup, I think it was in the UK, and he went to this bar, and no one showed up, and one of his fans noticed him walking down the street. So Sargon, rotund, chubby Sargon, retard, actually, I won't say that, or I won't say the F word on the show.
All right, I'm going to mute you. It's not interesting, Holistic One. You are using terms that I don't use.
Get the fuck out.
Leave, muted, go.
No, I was just making
removes
a joke.
From speaker. I don't care. You're not interesting. Fuck you. Facebook reinstates Trump after 2 years with new guardrails in place. A little more than a week after the Trump campaign urged Facebook parent Meta to lift the ban on the former president, the social media giant has agreed to reinstate him on both Facebook and Instagram after a 2-year ban. According to Nick Clegg, Meta's president of global affairs, Trump back on Facebook, but Trump is bound with his crappy social media, Truth Social, which I tried going to. It's just the center-right people, the Charlie Kirks being promoted at the top, It's basically a blog for center-right people, and when I get on there, I don't find any crowd. I don't find any of my supporters. So it's not something that people use. It's something that in a very restricted circle around Trump, people are using. So I don't know what he's going to do in response to this. Will he go back to Facebook? Will he go back to Twitter? He has mentioned that he was feeling comfortable on Truth, but the problem with Truth is it's not a platform that reaches many people other than a very specific MAGA circle around Trump. But he may be contractually bound, or he may be at least bound by his desire for Truth to be a success. But in the current environment that Elon has created on Twitter, I'd be surprised that Truth Social would succeed. And so we'll see what he does with this. As a last news item, I want to tell people that Project Veritas has announced that they would release some important news 30 minutes ago. Maybe it's already been released. I don't know. I was live. But Robert Malone is also saying that in 30 minutes from now, there will be a major space on Twitter where they want to uncover a video of a Pfizer exec revealing shocking new vaccine research and development plans. I think it may be over-promoted, because if you're going to reveal to me that Pfizer is planning to create a new vaccine, that doesn't surprise me. But I guess I'll check out the Twitter space and I'll see what is it that Project Veritas wants to expose. Hit Slap, how have you been doing tonight?
I've been doing very well. The show's gone very well. Enjoying everybody kind of joining and stuff like that. Also enjoyed your interaction with Richard Spencer. Reminded me of the old days, exactly as you were saying. So yeah, it's going very, very well. I've just got one question, if I may. I can do it later or now, or I'll try to keep it to one question a show. I know I'm notorious for asking a lot of questions, so let me know when's a good time and I'll jump in with my one question.
Yeah, well, we are at the conclusion, so whatever you want to bring in, go for it.
Perfect. Thank you, my friend. I just wanted to ask around the kind of COVID drugs, the antiviral drugs. I saw early on they were being administered kind of too late, you know, the virus had already replicated too much or whatever. A lot of people were taking the drugs, but they weren't doing anything. So my kind of question was, I don't know if you've kept up with it. Are there any of the antiviral drugs that work, or are the types of drugs that work? You know, if someone, I understand you cannot give medical advice, but kind of, are there any COVID antiviral drugs or anything like that, in your view, that seem to work the best? Just anything on that topic.
I've not been impressed by any of them. The general rule with antivirals is they suck. It's the same thing with batteries. You know how Elon Musk one day said, the problem with batteries is they suck. The problem with antivirals is they suck. And it's always been a problem, and I have no idea why, but somehow viruses are evolutionarily smart enough to get out of trouble.
That makes perfect sense, yeah, because in Australia at least, they're making a big deal. You know, we've got antiviral drugs, take them, the doctors promote them as being kind of magic cures, etc., even if you had the vaccine. So I was just curious kind of what your thoughts were and what they're kind of saying in your country about it. But that's about it from me. But thank you. Great show as always. It's good to see more and more people. You've done a stellar job as always. So thank you, JF.
All right. And I will tell everyone who's in the Twitter space, follow HitchSlap, follow me on Twitter, follow RocoETH. Follow Richard Spencer. They are great people who have come to talk to us tonight. And I was just blasted away by what Rocco told us about the blockchain. I can see a future that's better thanks to the blockchain and thanks to the kind of mechanism he described. To me, this looks like actual truth seeking, the same way Bitcoin looks like actual money. Bye-bye, everyone. Much love and sleep well. Thank you.